I am an anomaly.
Anemone.
I am an anomaly.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
Hey, welcome to the Anomaly Podcast. I'm Jen. I know you were expecting that Wheel of Time, Eye of the World book review that we promised, but we had a couple of listeners write in and say, gosh, I really want to read that book before you cover it, and I don't think I could do it in 2 weeks. Even Angela had trouble rereading it before this day rolled around, so we decided to push it back for 2 weeks, giving everyone enough time to read it and get ready to talk about The Eye of the World, which is the first book in Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time series. And if you don't think you could read it within 2 weeks, have a narrator read it for you. I really like the narrators who do The Wheel of Time. They're awesome. Kate Redding and her husband do it. I can't remember his name. Michael Kramer. So what am I doing this week instead, since we're not doing with The Wheel of Time? Well, about a month ago, I had the opportunity to interview someone, and our good friend Noah, who's a contributor on the Anomaly Podcast blog at anomalypodcast.com, he and I got together on Skype and we talked to Douglas Stearns, who's the author of a sci-fi book called The Harmonic Wars, which is book one of Guardians of the Crystal Skulls. We met Douglas last year at Austin Comic Con, and he asked if he could be on the show. Douglas is a cool guy, and after talking with him, I realized something, and I hope he doesn't take this the wrong way because I mean it as a compliment, but he would make a great addition to the Lone Gunman from the X-Files TV series. I'm serious. He's awesome. He's like this techno geek. He's a former IT guy, and he's into these really interesting, cool theories about pyramids and artifacts and aliens, and it's awesome that we got to have him on our show because Douglas has been on some really big radio shows like Coast to Coast and Midnight Caravan and Midnight in the Desert. I can't remember them all, but we're small fries compared to the stuff that he's been on. I hope you enjoy the conversation that we had with him. I think it was entertaining. Enjoy it. Have fun. And then I'll return at the end of the interview to tell you about how you can get in touch with us and talk to you about the next Anomaly Supplemental episode and all of that. One note, forgive the audio quality on this show. It's not like when Angela and I are on Skype together. They just don't have the mic set up that we do, so it might sound a little tinny, but I think the call overall is clean and pretty much easy on the ear. So enjoy.
I'm Doug Stearns. I was in the military, and after 20 years, I retired, and all of our children, we got 5 kids. All of them had started moving out of the house, and my wife said, okay, what are you going to do? And I said, well, yeah, let's do something for ourselves. So I walked away from my consulting job with an IT firm and started looking at different things to do. So like any good husband, I sat down and watched TV.
That'll happen.
Well, and actually it worked because there was this really cool show on ancient things, you know, what they were talking about was the Great Pyramid of Giza. And I was just amazed at all the controversy and how it was an enigma to history and what our historical records are, because it is truly out of place with history and time. And so I started doing all this research. Well, the research is what has landed me on those other shows. So I've been able to be on Caravan to Midnight with John B. Wells, and that's actually where I did my opening and release party for the book Harmonic Wars. And I was also on Coast to Coast AM, and just recently with Heather Wade on Midnight in the Desert, which is Art Bell's new production. But all this research brought me to the place where, you know, hey, there had to be a ancient society that existed thousands of years ago that was on a global basis. It existed globally. And so this rich storyline started coming, and so I started writing a book.
So tell us how you take that research about that real-world research and then take that and kind of move it and transition it into a fantasy sort of setting.
I like to look at things somewhat out of the box. Some people would say not just out of the box, but out of the box, off the table, and down the hall. I look at things from a much different perspective, and I try to keep as open-minded as I can. And as I was seeing all these ancient sites, I started noticing some things from a modern perspective. Many of these ancient sites, if you look at them from the air, they look like huge computer circuit boards. And I started seeing all of these similarities between all these sites. And it was truly amazing. There's a lot of similarities between the Great Pyramid of Giza and Nikola Tesla and what he was doing with Tesla coils back in the early 1900s. So this concept came to me that maybe the Great Pyramid of Giza was not a burial tomb, because there's no supporting evidence that it ever had a pharaoh or person buried inside there at any point in time. It's just out of place with all of the other tombs that they found as burial chambers. And so for my book, I said that it was a power supply. And Chris Dunn is an engineer, and he has done a great deal of research and says, well, it could be this type of generator or that type of generator. And, you know, here's the type of power and here's how it would work. And when you look at the inner chambers of that Great Pyramid, if you recreate those, you can make a ram pump out of those inner chambers and air vents. Once you prime it, it continually pumps water without the need of any mechanical device whatsoever. And so it's like, wow, you know, that's pretty amazing. Here's this massive structure that was built with so many things out of place. Like the Great Pyramid of Giza was perfectly aligned with the four cardinal points of the compass 2,000 years before the compass was invented, according to our history. So right there, we know there's something wrong with our historical accounts. We're a civilization, a people who forgot where they came from. So there's so much more in our history than what we understand and what we know. And that kind of led me towards this rich storyline. And it's like, well, I think I'm going to write a book. And my wife says, really? What are you going to write a book about? I said, I think it's going to have the Great Pyramid of Giza in it. She said, well, what kind of book? I said, well, science fiction. Is there any other kind?
Exactly.
You know, come on, hello. This wonderful story just started folding out in front of me. And I got in touch with a publisher, and we started working on the first draft. And I got to about a page 1,000, and she said, okay, stop. You're not Stephen King. You know, nobody's going to read a 1,000-page book from an unknown author. So I had to stop, put that project to the side, and find a way to release that story, because there was so much there. The story is kind of like Star Wars meets Game of Thrones without the incest.
So at first I was like, are you talking about Game of Thrones incest or Star Wars incest? Because
I just said without, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
Because it's kind of in both when you look at it that perspective. But it has multiple storylines. It has a large number of characters, but it's a story of good versus evil locked in battle for control.
Give us the premise without giving away all the details.
Okay. The storyline is about the guardians of the Crystal Skulls. The Crystal Skulls are based on the ancient Mayan legend of the 13 Crystal Skulls. And it's widely considered folklore, where these 13 Crystal Skulls will come back into existence and all be found at the end of time. There's about four Crystal Skulls that they found that are just of superior quality. They're one solid piece of quartz, and they're just almost perfect in the quartz itself. There's very few flaws in the quartz, and it's very difficult to see any tool marks. So many people thought it just came into existence rather than being carved. It's been largely dispelled as a folklore, but it fit with the genre I was writing in. So, hey, let's make it work. Mm-hmm. And it's science fiction. It's not, you know, science. My book is not going to be a reference for science. It's not going to be a reference for religion or anything like that. It's just science fiction, but it's based on several historical facts and locations. And I had this set up where each one of the 13 crystal skulls was represented by a person who was bonded to that skull. And the crystal skulls gave strength and longevity to the people. And I made 13 women warriors as my heroines. And they now have expanded ESP powers because they had latent empathic capabilities. Not only could they feel other people's emotions, but they could project their own emotions when you're in a battle, and you can project wave after wave of overcoming fear at your enemies, then you know, you're frozen solid and you can't do anything. You know, if you've ever been scared enough where you just freeze, that's the type of fear that they're able to project. They can, project nothingness, and you turn into a drooling fool standing there, you know, looking off into space, into nothing. Well, the main character is Anna, and she is wrestling with one of her great-great-grandsons because at the beginning of this story, she's very young, but she has longevity, so she doesn't age. None of the guardians do. And when she's around 300 years old, she's in this setting where her family are being attacked. And she uses the technologies that they have against these invaders that are killing her family. And she's enraged, and she does some things that she has problems with. She's going to wrestle with this in the future. And it really contains her. It kind of constricts her. She's emotionally distraught because, you know, she saw a part of her that she wasn't willing to accept. And she saves two of her great-great-great-grandsons and takes them on because their parents have died in this attack. These people are Native American, and so she takes these two sons, these two grandsons, and brings them to her place and raises them as her own. They know that that's their grandmother, but you know their memories are being blocked so that they don't see the horrific death that their parents both had in front of them. That causes more problems, and that's where the antagonists come in through one of her grandsons, Arturo. And the rest of the story is about them trying to reconcile themselves, Anna trying to wrestle with this guilt that she has because of, you know, the fact that she made examples of those American Indians and, you know, slaughtered them. And she has to wrestle with that, try and raise her grandsons, and it doesn't go well.
If she slaughtered them as an example, is she not a part of that culture?
She is part of that culture, so to speak. The 13 guardians are actually part of the ancient Mayan ruling council. Her husband by name is Uktuk. And the research that I did shows that he was the actual last king of the Mayans before the civilization kind of was decimated and spread out. And so I used that as a focal point to say, okay, this was her husband, and now I've got to try and, you know, write that into the story. It was pretty cool, but I didn't want to write a story about Uktuk. Too hard to, you know. So I wanted to write a story about Anna.
So do the crystal skulls give them longevity?
It's the power of the skulls, and the skulls were a gift from the forces of the light, or the creator. When I wanted this to be a story about good versus evil, I wanted it to be absolute good versus absolute evil. And as I'm writing this, I couldn't find better models than to have angels and demons in the story itself. So in the battles and the war that's ongoing between the forces of the good and the forces of the evil, as the two armies are approaching each other on the battlefield, I have angels and demons falling in beside them, but in their own dimension. The humans can't see the angels and the demons, but they're being influenced by them and guided. And so you've got this massive battle that occurs with 4, 5, 6 different points of view. And that's why it's a multidimensional war.
You have this real-world aspect to what you're bringing to this book. Talk about just that melding, the bringing together of things that are historical relics, things that we've studied, things that are in this real world, and then bringing that together with the things that are just kind of being created in your own imagination.
Okay, so what you want me to do is tie in the word harmonic wars with all of this stuff. And that I can do pretty easily, but it's going to take me a minute. When you go back and you look at all of these ancient sites, the Great Pyramid Giza, Göbekli Tepe, which is Stonehenge times 20 in Turkey, Stonehenge itself, Machu Picchu in Peru, you know, all of those ancient Incan and Mayan sites, all of those places have one thing in common. The types of stone that they use has a very high quartz content. That's kind of strange right there in and of itself. Also, the construction techniques are very similar. They use massive stones of high quartz content that use very little or no mortar whatsoever. Now, these structures have existed for thousands of years in earthquake zones, and they're still standing. We today can't build buildings that'll stand for 100 years without massive amounts of maintenance and, you know, work. And continuing from there, you look back at the older structures and they're still up and they're in earthquake zones. Why is all of that important? Because how do the people in Peru, in Bolivia, Easter Island, Great Britain, Turkey, Egypt, 4,000, 5,000 years ago, how do they all know how to do the same basic things out of the same types of materials? Did it just evolve and happen that way? I don't know. When you look at things, you can see similarities in the architecture that are undeniable. And it's looked like this person had to be involved here, 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 and here, because it's just way too similar. You can see the same things in India and Pakistan, China, and now they're finding these huge, massive pyramids in Bolivia. And there's this rich history that we don't know anything about that's out there. And we're finding more every day. And the more questions we have answered, the more questions we come up with. And the stones being, you know, high quartz content in and of itself is important. And I look at it from a harmonic example. Do you understand what harmonics is from a music standpoint?
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a guitar and you've got the top string and the bottom string are both tuned to E, and you strike the lower note, the higher note will reverberate on its own. Okay, that's a simplified example. But when you have people who can sing very well, and they're in perfect tune, you'll hear two different people singing, but you'll hear three notes. Where does that other sound come from? You know, we know that it happens. So when you go back to the Great Pyramid of Giza, it's this massive conduit of huge stones, 2.5 million stones of high quartz content. When that thing is vibrating and it's emitting its frequency, what is responding harmonically to that? And I would say it would be something like the obelisks. So you very much have a condition created where you have this global energy source that is transmitted wirelessly. That gets back to Tesla. And there's so much more with that that my research took me to that just, you know, really blows your mind. The movement in modern day to go towards standardized tuning, okay, which was A440 hertz. It changed from 432 hertz to 440 hertz. Well, who initiated that? That was back in 1939 by Joseph Goebbels of the Nazi Party. That in itself should be a huge stumbling block for modern people to say, what, you know, why was it so important for them to try and get global tuning, you know, standardized at 440 hertz. We don't understand completely what that means or what kind of impact it's had, but we do see the continued violence that's in our music and violence that's in our society that's grown exponentially since the 1950s. Could that have an impact? I don't know. But all these things are really, you know, fun things to look at from a science fiction standpoint, and it just made my mind go wild. And it's like, what can I do with that? And I don't know what really happened or who did what, but I can write a really cool science fiction story about that.
one of the things that interested me in this was the fact that scientists today are learning new ways to store data. And one of the ways they're doing that now is on little tiny disks that are made of glass, which is basically quartz.
Quartz.
And they can store data for thousands of years on these things, like 200 and I think they said 360 terabytes of data on each disk. I just think that's amazing. And I studied a little of archaeology when I was in college as an elective because I'm crazy like that. One day I'll volunteer for a dig. But I studied Mesoamerican archaeology and visited some sites in South America. One of them was Cobá. It's a Mayan complex, Mayan pyramids. And most of their structures are made of limestone. I think limestone is just that kind of material that is easy to shape and it lasts a long time. In my opinion, it's coincidence that they all have crystal in them, but they may also be using them because, you know, a lot of cultures also thought there was a lot of power in crystals. People use them today also for healing and things like that. So that it's just interesting that something that we can use today to store data has always had a significance, you know, over thousands of years. I'm a skeptic and I don't believe. I think a lot of times people want to believe, so they make something out of nothing. And one of the theories is that a lot of the structures that are haunted are made of limestone, and the events of history are somehow stored in the limestone, and you see a replaying of something that happened in history that isn't actually in front of you.
Exactly.
So that's an interesting kind of a theory that
exactly.
seems to work into what you're doing with the Harmonic Wars as well.
Absolutely. And that hits right on to some of the other things that I wanted to briefly touch on, was that quartz has multiple qualities about it. It has a data storage capability. Those quartz discs that you were just talking about, they're about the size of an American half dollar. And here we are looking at that 320, 360 terabytes of information. That's huge. And it's just a little bitty tiny disc. Of course, you know, some of the advertisement was, yeah, it'll hold information for 13 billion years. Well, yeah, I don't really
You have
know
to test
how they
that.
Would test that, yeah. but what they did say was that it would be fine up to 350 degrees Fahrenheit,
mm-hmm.
and it would not have any, you know, degradation of data capability at that temperature. So at room temperature, as long as it wasn't physically damaged, there's no need for any consideration that it would delete data just mm-hmm. arbitrarily, you know. So that was like, okay, that's pretty cool stuff. Well, what else does it have? Well, it chimes. It chimes like a bell when you hit it. If you are to tap on a granite stone, okay, it will chime. And the higher the quartz crystal content in it, the better it is to chime. If you go down to South Africa, they've got these things that are called bell stones, and they do chime just like bells. And they're thousands and thousands of years old. Well, they've got these massive structures there. They call them cattle crawls, okay? Michael Tellinger is the one that did a massive amount of research on these cattle crawls. And he said that history shows that, oh, there was probably 10,000 hunter-gatherers down there, and here's all of these cattle pens that they had. Well, there's no gates to get in and out of the pens. So did cows fly back then? Because these, you know, these cattle pens are 8 to 12 feet tall. So it doesn't make sense. When you look at it from an aerial standpoint, it looks like something much different. And then the structure takes on this cymatic experiment kind of structure. And if you've ever seen cymatic experiments, that's the stuff that really blow your mind.
What is that cymatic experiment?
Cymatic experiments, you can look it up on YouTube for anybody who's interested out there. And that's the impact of sound on matter. And what they do is they take a speaker and point it at a piece of tin metal, and they'll put salt on top of it. And as the frequency rises, the salt will take a different shape. Well, those cattle crawls look like certain frequencies. just on a huge, massive scale. And then you can see, you know, the stones are all fractured all around it. And it's like, that looks like a cymatic experiment itself. So what happened thousands and thousands of years ago that created this structure, these structures? Because there's hundreds of thousands of these structures down in South Africa. And that's where it really starts getting exciting, because we don't have enough people that are down there doing the archaeological digs and trying to uncover what were they and, you know, what's all connected. And here's all of these bellstone connections to all of these different frequencies, for lack of a better word.
It's like the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's all connected.
Yeah, something connected it. And, you know, who was doing this stuff? Even if you go back and you look at the Avenue of the Dead in Mexico, and you look at it through a modern lens, that looks like a computer circuit board. You know, those types of things are just amazing to me. And the Greek structures, the Roman structures, you know, the Egyptian structures, you know, they start looking more and more like computer circuit boards than anything else. And sound seemed to feed those structures.
I mean, if you do see something like that in a street layout, what do you think that purpose was? It could just look like it, or if it has a function, what does that function do? You think it powers a city? I mean, what is it that you are thinking that the layout of the city does with the sound?
For my book, it was an ancient power grid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it was in reality. And I look at things as a series of possibilities. Well, it could be this. It could just be coincidence. It could be any number of things. For my book, it was an ancient power source of wireless electricity.
Gotcha.
That's the underlying technology that these ancient people had. In my book, Harmonic Wars, the war broke out. And it was a, well, let's get back to that for just a second. Harmonic Wars is based on the fact, or the concept, that we are not the original inhabitants of this solar system. This is not biblical Earth. This is a colony. We colonized this solar system, and because of this war that broke out, the civilization that was here was destroyed. In a post-apocalyptic society, there will be very small factions of the elite of the governments that will survive. And the rest of the people are pretty much out there to fend for themselves. I can see that happening today. You know that the elite will survive and the rest of us will have to struggle for food. Okay. And within two generations, we'll forget where we came from. It won't take long to get so in tune with just trying to feed ourselves and find good sources of water and protect ourselves that we'll forget about the things like the internet. And it'll all be sitting around a campfire talking about the great god of the internet, you know? and our grandchildren will not have any idea or the concept of indoor running water and plumbing, electricity. You know, it'll all be like magic to them. Something like this happened in the past. We can look with certainty to about 3000 BC at historical records of some sort. It's in stone, it's in, you know, papyrus, and we can see bits and pieces of things. The farther we go back, the dicier it gets. But there's this block around 3000 BC where we have this giant black hole of information. We know things happened. We don't know what they were specifically. There was probably an event at that point. I think that there was probably another event around 10,000 years ago, because there's a whole bunch of information that my research led me to that just shows 10,000 years ago, here was something that happened that caused all of these different events. It's mind-boggling. But the further back we go in time, the more advanced things become. Now, how does that happen? I mean, we look at our technology today and how cars have advanced. We build a car, we improve it the next year, we build it, we improve it, we build it until you get to the 1980s and then everything declined.
Right, and they all fall apart.
Yeah, and then we start building good quality things again, okay? But generally speaking, we learn, we build, we learn, we build. Well, according to our history, the Great Pyramid itself was built 4,500 years ago. How come everything after that is crumbling and is lesser? It's not as good. It's not as advanced. Everything. The Great Pyramid was supposedly built by the 4th Dynasty Egyptians, and yet the 9th Dynasty pyramids are falling apart. How do you do that? That
doesn't make sense. Well, to me, I mean, I see there are many things that could have happened. You have the plagues, you have the invasions, you know, the Greeks invaded, everything has to start over to build back up, you know.
I agree with you. Yeah, so. I see that. And, you know, I look at things through the scope of, okay, something happened. What exactly happened? I don't know. You know, and you'll listen to a bunch of ancient alien conspiracy people, and the first thing that they'll say is, well, I don't know what the question is, but the answer was the aliens did it.
Yeah, that's everyone's answer.
You know, it had to be the aliens. It had to be the aliens. Every time somebody says it had to be something, I'm going, no, there's other possibilities for that. And I think that we sell mankind short by saying, oh, it had to be the aliens. There's no way people could think of this kind of stuff. No, I don't agree with that. We know very little about sound technology at this point in time in our current history. We look at cymatic experiments, and we're really in the infancy of it. We can levitate ping pong balls with sound. We can levitate drops of water with sound. I think thousands of years ago, mankind could levitate these massive blocks of stone with sound. That makes more sense to me, that we had a much better understanding of nature. We had a much better understanding of our surroundings and sound and how sound impacts matter, because we know sound impacts matter through the cymatic experiments. Okay, how does that work and how can you control it? And I think it's easier to believe that we've lost that technology than it is to believe that, oh, the aliens did it.
Yep.
Well, this has been a really interesting conversation, Douglas. I'm glad that you came on. We'll have to do something like this again. It's a super cool topic. Where can everyone find your books online?
Okay, this is where you can find my books. You can find them, of course, on Amazon. They're ebooks at Kindle, Nook, and iBooks, okay? But if you go to 3LPublishing.com and click on the tab that says books, okay, you'll see that we can get the books there, and it's $5 off the regular price. And there are still some signed copies of the first edition of Harmonic Wars, Guardians of the Crystal Skulls. I've got 4 books planned in the series, and this is the first of the 4. The second is already in draft, and it's going to be a big story, and it's going to be awesome.
Fantastic.
It was so cool to meet you at Comic-Con. I'm glad we did. His booth was right across from us, and we had a lot of fun conversing during the con and kind of staring at people and going, wow, what are they wearing? And things like that.
And can I get a picture with them?
Yes. Can I get Yeah. No, I just like, we're weirdos too. So, I mean, everybody fits in there.
It was an absolute blast meeting y'all at Comic-Con. And thank you again for inviting me on to the podcast with y'all.
Absolutely.
Look for me on Facebook, Twitter, Google+.
Of course, yes.
I'll send all the rest of the stuff to y'all too.
Thanks again, Douglas, for joining us. So if this one piqued your interest and you're new to the show, iTunes only shows about 50 if you're just browsing through the store, but if you subscribe, you'll get all the episodes going back about 6 years. Our show is about 9 or 10 years old now, so not everything is up there, but if you go to anomalypodcast.com, you can find everything we've ever done, except the first episode, which is still MIA. We haven't found it yet, but there's a listener out there somewhere who's been listening since day one who might have it. I just know. And if that person could share it with us, we could then share it with you. It's not my favorite, but it's part of Anomaly history. If you like this episode, check out the Anomaly supplemental episode called X-Files: The Essential Episodes. I'll link to that in the show notes for this episode, or you can find it in the podcast feed. You can also find an episode that we did from 2009 called Jose Chung from Outer Space, and that will also be linked in the show notes, or you can find it in our episode archive under the menu heading Bonus. And then sometime, I think in the summer, I did an episode with my good friend Jenny McNiven, who's an archaeologist, about the mysterious Outlander standing stones. And in that episode, we talked about Diana Gabaldon's purpose for the stones and how that contrasts with their real purpose or our theories on what the standing stones were really used for. And then Jenny wrote a blog post for us about Indiana Jones called Let Indy Be Indy, and it's about Indiana Jones 5. You can find all of that, once again, in our show notes for this episode, or just look in the search box on our website at anomalypodcast.com. Hey, we had a couple of people send us donations. I'm not going to call you out by name, but you know who you are. We really appreciate it. It helps us a lot. It's so helpful, even if it's just a few bucks. That goes towards the hosting of the podcast and the website. It doesn't go for any other thing other than the podcast. So if you get some value from Anomaly, if you're enjoying what we do here and you want to keep this machine rolling, you want us to keep producing episodes, we would be so grateful if you would just click donate and send us a buck to $2, $3, $4, $5, whatever you think we're worth. That would be awesome. And you can do that by going to anomalypodcast.com and clicking on any of our show notes and find donate at the top of every one of those show notes pages. Or if you have PayPal, you can send your donation to girlygeeks@gmail.com. Don't forget the Z in geeks, girlygeeks@gmail.com. Thanks again. And if you love books and you're like me and you like to get suggestions, you can sign up for the newsletter too. And I send them out maybe every 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks. I had been doing a whole list of them, but now I've been featuring one book at a time. You can also find all of our social media outlets, Goodreads, Pinterest, Tumblr, Facebook, and Twitter, all of that stuff at anomalypodcast.com. If you can't donate, you can always rate the show. We love those too. They help us out greatly. It helps people find us. Just click some stars in your little listening app. So next week on Anomaly Supplemental, Casey and Sue will be doing a musical theater podcast. We do those from time to time on the show. Well, I don't. Angela, Casey, and Sue do. And this time it's just going to be Casey and Sue, I think. But they were taking comments on Facebook about if you were stuck on a desert island and the only form of entertainment you had was to use some magic and make any show you wanted from, and it has to be like a professional stage performance, make that happen on the desert island to keep you entertained. Which show would it be? I happen to choose The Wizard of Oz. I don't know if they'll mention that, but it's always been my favorite, and I always used to sing Somewhere Over the Rainbow in the bathtub. I may or may not still do that. Hey, I can belt it out. So if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to Anomaly so you don't miss that show or any of the others that we put out. We have a voicemail line, which is 432-363-4742. We haven't gotten one of those in a while, and we really like them. Give us a call. We really appreciate the time you took out of your day to listen to our show, and we hope you stick around. We'll talk to you later. I'm Jen, and you've been listening to the Anomaly Podcast, where female and fandom converge.
Gamma Quadrant Golf Clap.